Hi, this is Miss Melis, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you're listening to Tales from the Tub. August 19th, 2016, turquoise. This color is provided by Mark, the encaffeinated one, who told me he wanted me to talk about turquoise because he likes the way it sounds. It's fun to say. I think so, too. Turquoise is a color I associate with the best parts of living in Colorado when I was a little kid. I'm originally from New Jersey, and I'll never entirely stop being a Jersey girl, but I lived in Colorado more often than not from the time I was 5 to the time I was 10. At first, we lived in Golden on 16th Street. My preschool teacher, Ray Goodhart, lived one street over, and this is how innocent the 70s were. My friends Heather and Carrie and I used to hang out at his house on weekends. It helped that he was living with my other friend, Ben's mom. Weekends at Ray's were like some kind of Colorado hippie version of Hodgepodge Lodge. Extra points if you know what that is. He had pet ferrets in a run in the backyard, and inside the kitchen he'd taken an old cigarette machine, the kind with the pull knobs, so it would dispense, and refurbished it so it would, like, dispense snack packs of chocolate pudding or granola bars or bags of pretzels. It was an awesome place to be a kid. Ray was the first teacher who had a real impact on me, and we still connect through email or postcards every few years, just sort of randomly. I keep trying to do a better job of staying in contact with him, but our lives are divergent and busy and stuff happens. In any case, he was the guy who used to make all of us spell multisyllabic words with our alphabet cereal pieces on the table, just dry cereal, before we were allowed to eat them at snack time at preschool. And by the time I started kindergarten, he had me reading at a fourth grade level. So when I actually got to fourth grade in that school system and they handed me what our reader was going to be, I said, yeah, I read this years ago. And they didn't believe me, and I had to have him write a letter to prove it. He went on, this was at Palo Alto Preschool in Golden, Colorado, but he went on to start a bunch of early learning centers, which he then sold. And now I think, but I don't remember for sure, I think he's an investor in a toy company that specializes in educational toys. He was a pretty cool guy. Ben, on the other hand, whose mom was Ray's partner at the time, was the first boy I ever loved. We were devoted as 2 5-year-olds could possibly be. His birthday was like 2 days before mine, maybe 3, but I think it was 2. And our mothers had become close friends during our time at preschool, so for a couple of years there, we shared our birthday parties. We were constantly hanging out together. We slept over at each other's houses. He was the first boy I ever kissed. I don't have a lot of keepsakes from childhood. Mostly I have books. But somewhere in a box, I have a tiny silver and turquoise ring that he gave me. The year I turned 7, we moved to Georgetown, which was another amazing place to be a little kid. Now, in Golden, I had learned to ride my bike for the first time, a two-wheeler, in the parking lot of the Coors Brewery, because we lived sort of above it. In Georgetown, I finally got rid of training wheels, and I learned how much fun it could be to ride a bike through a really good mud puddle. This was before mountain bikes and before people wore helmets. It was just an old Schwinn, but I loved it. I went everywhere on that bike. I got in so much trouble on that bike. But again, Georgetown was an amazing place to be a little kid. It's only about an hour from Denver, but once you're there, you're absolutely in the heart of the Rockies. It's one of the last towns before you get to the switchbacks that take you into the ski areas like Loveland. And there would be times when I was little coming home, because we lived in town, we would go to school, and there would be a sign on the door in winter that would say, no school today, buses can't get through because the pass would be snowed shut. My association with turquoise there came from 2 sources. One was the rock shop that was a few blocks away from the country store, sort of like a mercantile, that my mother owned. And we used to go there and hang out and buy rocks and play with all the shiny polished rocks. And basically it was like a kid in a candy store, except it wasn't candy, it was just pretty polished rocks. The other turquoise association was that there is this Navajo family that lived up the block from us, and in the front room of the building they owned, they would sell jewelry and blankets and beaded moccasins and all those kitschy things that you think are Indian that really aren't, but tourists eat them up. But they would also make homemade tortillas and black bean burritos and tostadas like I had never had. This was before Mexican food was like a staple food of American life as it is now. So Taco Bell was a new thing, and that was the closest thing to Mexican food we had. But the Navajo family would do these burritos just in their kitchen, and they would wrap them in tinfoil, and we'd take them home and have lunch, and oh my God, they were good. Their tortillas remind me a lot, or actually I should do this as backwards. When I finally visited my mother in Mexico after she moved there, and we started going to street fairs, and I tasted Oaxacan tortillas, I was immediately brought back to the Navajo ones that I had as a kid, because they're very similar. They're sort of a coarse cornmeal. They often use blue corn, or at least not the pristine stuff that we're used to seeing that's so very commercial. They're a little bit rustic. They're always very homespun. And they just taste so good because it's all real, organic, non-commercial ingredients. The Navajo family that we lived in, that was doing all this in Georgetown, had a daughter my age, but I don't remember her ever being in school with us. I don't remember her name. I just remember they were there. And then one year they didn't come back because they would always go away in the depth of winter, and I have no idea where they went, probably to wherever their normal home was to make more blankets and moccasins and beaded jewelry and whatever so that they could bring it back. It was almost as though coming to Georgetown for tourist season was being on like a Ren Faire circuit for craft people. It was the same kind of thing for some merchants. But then the rest of us lived there all the year. My mom and the person who was her husband at the time were going through a really rough patch back then. They ended up divorcing about a year and a half later. But she did this amazing job of keeping me in a bubble, protected to the point that there was barely any awareness of all the tension between them. And since he worked in Denver, we only really saw him on weekends. So the two of us were part of this lovely little small town community, and everybody knew everybody. And like my second grade teacher literally lived across the street from the school, and he and my mom were in the Chamber of Commerce together. And it was basically the Colorado Rockies version of Stars Hollow. Interestingly, some of my favorite memories of Georgetown involve winter. And if you know me at all, you know I don't do winter. I live in Texas. I like Texas winter. It was on a Tuesday last year. Georgetown has serious winter. Georgetown had the kind of winter where by mid-December, there was so much ice on the street that it was at the level of the 3-foot tall curbs. It serious winter. I remember Breckenridge, which was one of the towns close by, actually had to warn tourists to stay off the streets after twilight because there were packs of wild dogs who had mainly run away from hippies who weren't taking care of them and turned feral. And they would be up and down the streets in the winter searching for food. But Georgetown was not like that. Georgetown was actually pretty cool. And in the winter, it was like you went from festival to festival. See what I mean? It was just like Stars Hollow. So there would be the Halloween party where there was always this race to see would it snow or would it not snow before Halloween. We would trick-or-treat all through town. The music teacher from the school would wait until 5 or 6 kids were lined up in her living room, and then she'd play the piano, and we'd have to like parade through her house and do somersaults. You had to do a trick or you didn't get a treat. And a lot of the businesses let us trick-or-treat in the businesses like after school but before dark. And the firefighters would have everyone meet there at the end of trick-or-treat, and they would have a party for us and a little haunted house in the firehouse, and it was really just very sweet and innocent. And then as winter deepened, as it got into proper winter, December, January, February, there was Christmas market. Which is, it still happens. It's the first 2 or 3 weekends in December, and in the town park there are all these booths. They're permanently there. They look like stables, but they're not. They're actually like craft booths. So all these different vendors would come, and one of them always had bratwurst, and a lot of them had jewelry. And it was the same thing in February for Fasching, which is basically a German version of Carnival. It technically starts in November and goes all the way to Shrove Tuesday, but most people only really celebrate it in the couple of weeks around Mardi Gras, just like Carnival, except winter. And so the booze would always, like I said, they would have bratwurst, they would have roasted chestnuts in the middle of the square, and a bonfire where people could hang out, and there was cocoa and cider and live music, or sometimes just piped music, and all the vendors would be selling like Colorado kitsch. So there'd be a lot of leather goods, obviously, and there would be a lot of silver because the Ajax silver mine was literally right there in those mountains. And then, of course, because it was Colorado, there would be lots of stuff that was like belt buckles and bracelets and rings and earrings made with turquoise. Bathtub Mermaid, Tales from the Tub is written by Melissa A. Bartell under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike International 4.0 license and is produced using Bostock and Audacity. For show notes, music credits, and transcripts, please visit www.bathtubmermaid.com. You can contact me on Twitter or Instagram at Meliss, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, or you can send an email to Miss Meliss, M-I-S-S-M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, @gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold.